Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Today we're going to talk about some of the causes of anxiety disorders.
Always tricky business. This,
anytime we talk about causes, I always feel like we have to hesitate.
I know what it does. It creates anxiety.
It does create anxiety.
No, we're talking about the causes of anxiety, and you're right. It's always with a little trepidation that right. We wander into the cause woods.
Right, because it's, you know, if we knew absolutely right. what causes anything, mm-hmm. then we should be able to prevent it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we spoke the other day, yesterday, about how anxiety disorder is the most prevalent disorder. Mm-hmm. I mean, 30% of the population. Right. So, you know, if we really knew the cause,
right.
then we'd be able to prevent it. But, so we're not going to propose the idea that we know,
you know,
why everybody has anxiety.
I was just running down the list of DSM. You take all the DSM-5 diagnoses.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care which one you pick. You would have to have the same discussion when it comes to cause. Because
oh,
there are so many people who have, for example, ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be a single cause.
Right.
And it doesn't matter whether you're talking about anxiety, depression, substance abuse.
Right.
There's never really a single cause.
Right.
So the most we can do is talk about factors associated
right.
with... because when you're working with humans, you can't do the experiments
right.
on humans that you would need to do to establish causality.
Right. Right.
You know, we can, if we're dealing with crops,
right.
you know, we can control everything but mm-hmm. one factor. You can't
right.
do that. You can't control everything with humans.
Yeah.
You know, it's more complicated.
Exactly.
But I think you're right. When you talk about 30% of the population having a disorder
mm-hmm.
at some time in their lives,
mm-hmm.
you're not talking about a single cause anymore.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about three different categories.
Right. I think that's a good way to...
The roots of someone's anxiety mm-hmm. could be found. The first is going to be genetic. And I think
inheritance.
That, you know, you have to start there because that's the basis of everything.
That's right.
And you can tell some of this. You could tell that genetics plays a role
mm-hmm.
in the fact that there is a heritability.
Right.
If you have a family member with anxiety, the probability of you having an anxiety disorder increases
right.
By more than chance.
Right.
So there is a heritability. And also because look at babies. You know, you can look at little ones, and there are many little ones mm-hmm. who are sort of born anxious. You know, some little children, before they've really experienced much in life, are already pretty anxious.
You know, you can't do something as a species, any species, you can't do something that you don't have the genes to do.
Right.
Okay? So the fact that we can see or hear or move or think, it's all tied up eventually mm-hmm. with our genes.
Right.
Well, every once in a while, so we have these genes that create anxiety. We're supposed to be anxious.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
a little anxiety. We said this on the first day of this discussion.
Yeah.
Anxiety is also a motivator.
Right.
When I'm anxious, I'm motivated to do something,
right.
either approach or avoid.
Right.
But I'm motivated to do something. So I need that. But every once in a while, it goes awry.
Right.
And so there is always a genetic factor
mm-hmm.
in every one of these mental illnesses.
Right.
You inherit the risk.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is you can inherit a different amount of risk.
Right.
Some people inherit a little risk. Some people inherit a lot of risk. And you can see this in the same family. You can have four children.
Right.
One of them, for some reason, is very anxious from birth.
Mm-hmm.
They're fussy. They cry. They don't sleep well. They don't eat well. They spit up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it very early on that there's an underlying anxiety in
right.
this child. Other kids are terribly resilient. You know, you can hang them up by one leg and they'll sleep all night.
Right.
They're just tolerant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think that's an important piece, the resilience factors.
Right. You inherit resilience.
Who knows where some of that comes from?
Right.
I mean, we know some environmental things that can create some resilience for a person, but
Otherwise, you know, it's just sort of in you.
It's part of your temperament.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So genetics is certainly a possible source of someone's right. anxiety disorder. And again, if you have a family member, especially the closer the family member gets to you genetically, so That's if it's right. a parent, an identical twin, mm-hmm. or something like that, your probability increases.
Right.
So the further out you go family-wise, mm-hmm. the less of an impact or less right. of a relationship that is.
It's your great-great uncle mm-hmm. somewhere in another country that, yeah. you know. But if it's your father or yeah. your mother, then it's getting perilously close.
Right.
But it's part of your temperament. It, right. You're just born with it, and any parent who has had multiple children
right.
will tell you that their temperaments are all different. Some children right. are very tolerant of change. Some can't stand to make changes.
Right.
So the first thing we have to acknowledge is that it is just a genetic inheritance.
Right.
Just a throw of the dice.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Now, the second category, I suppose, is going to be environment.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. despite the resilience
right.
that you're born with, mm-hmm. Many times, you know, some people just even with tremendous adversity, they still have enough resilience to overcome. But, you know, if you can arrange a situation, especially if it's a repetitive mm-hmm. situation, that's going to elicit anxiety. You know, if you take a small child and you hide in their bedroom closet every night, and every night as soon as the lights go out, you jump out dressed as a clown and scare them.
You're going to be arrested.
you should be, but you're going to create an anxiety disorder.
Right. I'm going to talk about licking and grooming. You know,
yeah.
remember the famous rat experiments
right.
from years ago. One of the reasons we use rats in experiments is they grow up fast. So within a few months, they're teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So we can judge their teenage behavior within a few months. We don't have to wait for years. So these experiments were done years ago that they would take the rat pups away from the mother, stress them either with temperature or noise or something, get them all stressed out, put them back in the cage with the mother. And the mothers who attended to the rat pups, who licking and mm-hmm. grooming, they would touch them and lick them and comfort them. When those little rat pups became teenagers, they looked normal.
Mm-hmm.
The mothers who didn't provide that,
mm-hmm.
those rat pups, when they became teenagers, were very aggressive and were both emotionally hyper-reactive.
Right.
Okay? And so we've been able to do similar experiments with humans, and we found exactly the same results.
Yeah.
In fact, it changes a segment of DNA
right.
in both humans and rats.
Right.
Okay. So early environmental deprivation,
mm-hmm.
we know, can create
right.
these sorts of disorders
right.
as you age, as you
right.
get older.
And we didn't, when we did those experiments with humans, we didn't
no.
take them away from their parents and stress them and put them back, not like that. But we look
right.
at environments and neighborhoods and
right.
places where, you know, high crime rates and high mortality rates
right.
and poverty stricken areas. And we look at, you know, those children who grew
right.
up in those environments as compared to kids who grew up in less stressful environments, and we can see some of those tendencies.
And now, fortunately for all of us, a very thoughtful pediatrician out in California
mm-hmm.
Started to look at these connections between early experiences and later outcomes,
mm-hmm.
Physical outcomes and mental right. outcomes.
ACEs.
And started that ACEs study.
Yeah.
And we all thrive on that today.
Right.
It was a brilliant contribution to
right.
our understanding of children. And ACEs stands for adverse circumstances, ACES.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we did the study with humans. If you
right.
grow up in an environment that's violent, drug-fueled, alcohol-fueled,
right.
people dying in your neighborhood.
Right.
There was a study done years ago that if a child witnesses a murder, their reading scores go down by 5 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're and there are kids in Chicago and other big
mm-hmm.
cities who experience those kind of murders all the time.
Right.
And you wonder what it's doing to them. Well, it's creating anxiety in them.
Yeah.
So we have to remember that we have a basic temperament, but we're born into an environment,
right.
And those two interact with each other.
Right.
You know,
right.
You can create ADHD in children.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah. You can create any
of these disorders.
And so with anxiety, it's no different. You know, mm-hmm. Those adverse childhood experiences. Neglect.
Right. Neglect can do it.
You know, emotional abandonment.
Right.
Feelings of shame or imposed mm-hmm. feelings of shame. All of these things can create anxiety in a person who may not otherwise have experienced anxiety.
That's right.
Otherwise.
You may have a very low risk, genetic right. risk of having mm-hmm. anxiety, but you put that person in adverse circumstances,
right.
Or you neglect, you know, child exposed to neglect, a child exposed to abuse and abandonment mm-hmm. and shame, all of those things can trigger
right.
the genetic predisposition.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, the last of the three areas of potential causes mm-hmm. of anxiety is going to be medical causes.
Right.
And interestingly, there are medical conditions, and maybe interestingly, but not necessarily surprisingly,
right.
There are medical conditions that increase one's risk for anxiety disorders, and many of them make sense, you know, especially
yeah.
chronic
conditions,
you know, terminal conditions oftentimes, especially if they're terminal conditions with a significant deterioration
right.
over time, it can cause anxiety, either in the person, that's the medical cause,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes in caregivers, and that's the environmental right. cause. And
that's
so
right.
there, again, is that bit of a relationship.
A good point.
You can have cardiac problems or heart issues that can result in anxiety disorders as well as hormonal.
That's true. I hadn't thought about the caregivers, but that's
mm-hmm.
really an excellent example of you have the patient who might become anxious because
right.
of their medical condition, but you have the caregiver reacting to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
But when the caregiver reacts and says, I am anxious, my
mm-hmm.
anxiety is increasing,
right,
the caregiver is also very tired,
right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to go into that are we mislabeling these things?
Well, I think that, and I wasn't thinking about that kind of anxiety. I was thinking about the anxiety of, you know, this is a loved one that's going to be passing from an illness. Now, what if I have that illness, or what if I have that predisposition for it, or what if I get sick, and
mm-hmm.
you know, those kinds of, that kind of anxiety, as opposed to the stress of coping with and managing a caregiver. I think that those may
be. Now, what does the caregiver suffer from?
Right.
Stress?
Or
anxiety?
I guess it could be either, depending
right.
on. Yeah.
But that's the complication of talking
right.
about anxiety, is that if the caregiver, we say the caregiver is stressed.
Right. Certainly stressed.
Does the caregiver have anxiety?
Right. And that would
are you
to,
developing an anxiety disorder? I think
right.
that's the first question.
Right.
Probably not.
Right. Well, yeah, it depends on, it'll depend on how far that goes. Yeah.
That's right.
Because it could just be
if
stress.
If it leads to impairment,
yeah.
then maybe you are talking about,
right.
a person could develop a disorder.
Right.
But more likely it's the stress of caregiving.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is the biological response. I'm
mm-hmm.
tired.
Mm-hmm. And then we would call it chronic stress
when
it's over
stress.
A period of time, yeah. So, and it, we had that discussion on Monday, the difference between stress, anxiety,
right.
and anxiety disorders. And so, yeah, but that is where it gets complicated. And, you know, on Saturday when we talk about treatment, this is where it's going to be really important, because what treatment do you give for stress versus anxiety? Versus anxiety disorders.
And there's another issue. When we talk about the medical, we're really not talking about the medical causes of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the medical risk factors that
right.
are associated,
right.
that could be associated with anxiety.
Right.
And so if you have a person with some digestion, like irritable bowel,
mm-hmm.
and I don't pretend to know much about colitis versus,
mm-hmm.
you know, ulcerative colitis versus irritable bowel versus what these other digestive problems. But I understand it's a painful experience,
right.
okay? So does irritable bowel syndrome precede anxiety? Does it make you anxious because of the chronic pain,
mm-hmm.
the chronic discomfort, the chronic... You might not get sick every time you eat, but every time you eat, you risk getting sick.
Right.
Okay. So the uncertainty of what a meal is going to do to you, this normal thing mm-hmm. that you do three or four times a day, could cause me to experience pain. That could lead to stress. Does it lead to anxiety? Or does an anxious person, is a person who has a temperament for anxiety
right.
more prone to digestive problems like IBS? Right. Does IBS
yeah.
follow from the anxiety?
Right. Mm-hmm. Chicken or the egg? I think...
Is it a chicken?
It's a bit of a chicken or the egg some extent.
We see a lot of people with chronic pain.
Right. And you know, my first line of treatment mm-hmm. For people in those kinds of situations is to treat the stress first. Reduce stress first, because most of the time, I think, you know, I have a patient, for example, who has a gastritis, and you know, physicians have tried different things.
So that would be a mild form of a digestive problem, right? I mean, compared to IBS or colitis,
she gets pretty
or...
distressed. It would get to the point where she was, you know, she would vomit regularly.
And it was pretty serious.
But she's a pretty anxious person, and so we made a few adjustments to things, and all to reduce stress, and all of those symptoms
diminished
significantly. From you know, vomiting once or twice a day to maybe once a week, if not once every other week, because we reduced the stress. Now, I don't know that it cured gastritis or anything like that.
Because she may have
maybe something else going on.
Some kind of underlying medical
right. problem. Right. And so I think that what we're getting to here is, you know, you have these heart-related issues, these gastrointestinal-related issues. You have a lot of these medical issues that are closely tied to anxiety and stress and anxiety disorders and things like that. But the thing that we have to be cautious of is that chicken or the egg argument.
Right.
You know, is that's one of the issues, is the chicken or the egg, which came first? And so we need to make sure that we're managing both of them. Many people out there who have gastritis or IBS and those kinds of things, they strictly go the GI route, and they find little, if any, real benefit to that treatment, because they're not really managing the core problem.
You can take things that will provide symptomatic relief.
Right.
And if you listen to commercials on TV, you provide symptomatic relief for... I want more than symptomatic relief. I don't want to cover up the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get to the cause.
Okay. Which is what functional medicine is all about,
right?
Is getting to the root cause mm-hmm. of some of that. And that's what we try to do a lot of that here, to get to the root cause of it. And if if you're addressing the medical piece, but you're also addressing the psychological piece, the stress piece, mm-hmm. oftentimes you're going to find much more benefit. But I think that the other thing we have to be cautious of is the way in which we label our body.
Right.
You know, and that sounds like a very strange way to say it.
It's not label our body, it's label the conditions,
the feelings
that we have. Right.
You know, if your stomach is upset,
mm-hmm.
And at the same time that you're about to go in and take a test, you're going to label that upset stomach as anxiety.
Test anxiety.
If your stomach is upset and you're about to walk into a theme park onto a roller coaster, you're going to label that as excitement, perhaps.
Or fear. Right. This is a fear response because I get it every time I get onto a roller coaster.
Right.
So I call this thing fear.
Right. And so we many times our body physiologically, right. we experience different feelings and we label them according to previous experiences, and sometimes we mislabel.
You know, I just thought about that. when people watch scary movies, okay, when you watch a scary movie, what is the emotion that you have?
Mm-hmm.
And most people would say fear. But if a person, I have a friend who loves scary movies. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how do you love a scary movie?
Right. Right?
If at some point she labeled the feeling arousal.
Right, excitement.
I like to be excited.
Right.
I like to ride roller coasters. I like to, because they energize me.
Right.
And they don't label it as fear.
Right.
Then scary movies are a form of entertainment.
Right.
Excitement, like a roller coaster ride, not a source of fear.
Right.
Just because of the way they label it.
Because it raises that arousal level. Yeah, absolutely. And then they say...
I think that's what she's doing.
And then it will change to... I like being scared.
She likes the feeling of being scared.
Right.
Not even scared. She likes the feeling of being excited
right.
by this.
And that's what
because
it
really she doesn't label it as fear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I think happens in those kinds of situations. And
she would. I'm knowing this woman as I do.
Yeah.
She likes that kind of stimulation.
And the counter to that, though, is the problems that some people have where they mislabel excitement or... novelty as fear or stress or anxiety when it's not warranted. You know, my son used to have a difficult time with this because he loves playing sports, but when he was little, you know, he would throw up before football games, and he would, you know, really have a hard time going out to do anything where he's out on the field and any of the spotlight is on him. He'd have a really difficult time. Now he sees it as more related to excitement.
Right.
But before, he was labeling that as stress and anxiety and fear.
Just because of the way he conceptualized it.
Right.
In his mind, it was this.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as it became the same feeling, same experience, you just label it differently.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So a lot of our therapy works to...
Label it.
Appropriately label those feelings in our body.
Yeah, because frequently we don't do it. Because two people can have the same physiologic sensation, but label it differently and respond to it differently.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So
complicated mess.
Yeah.
So it could be related to some medical condition,
right.
Especially chronic pain, chronic discomfort of some type, will make you anxious. Does it create an anxiety disorder? We don't know yet because other criteria have to be met.
Right.
But certainly it stresses the organism.
Absolutely. Okay. So, all right. I think that's it for today,
Fun. Yeah.
Before we go, we've been trying all week to mention the upcoming Coming Out of the Darkness, A Concert of Hope event at Theater Winter Haven. You can contact Theater Winter Haven, THEATRE, winterhaven.com. Get some additional information about this event that will be on May 24th at 7:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. It's an event that is put on, written and directed by Norm Small, and features the best of Central Florida talent, and it's all about raising awareness for suicide prevention.
And
all the proceeds go to a local community mental health facility as well as the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So
when does 13 Reasons come on again?
The 18th? Later this month.
Mm-hmm. So today's the 15th. So
yeah.
In a couple of days, 13 Reasons, the popular show, last year's, I want to say hit, but it was much talked about show about suicide in teenagers. We'll have its second season this year. It starts May 18th, so kids, if you have teenage children, preteens, they may be ready for that and maybe ready to talk about it.
Right, so. This season looks to take a little bit of a twist, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. And I think it's the 18th that it comes out. That'd be this coming Friday.
14th
or
18th,
So, all right, well, that is it for today. Mm-hmm. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you'll find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening, have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.